This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you once again. And as always, you are listening to the show live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show on our HRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest is certainly no stranger to HRRN, and he's no stranger to the winner's circle, as he proved once again this past weekend, winning not one, but two Grade 1 races within a 24-hour period. To date, he has saddled 1,738 winners with purse earnings exceeding $87 million. That's pretty darn good. He is trainer Ken McPeak, and he is with me now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Kenny, appreciate the time, my friend.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And, you know, I guess you could say that that's a pretty good 24 hours, isn't it?
It sure was. You know, you never know how things are going to play out. You take shots in some of these races. And we just had a fantastic weekend. Robbie Alvarado did a great job. And my staff all together across between Baltimore and Lexington and Churchill. Super job.
Yeah, and it wasn't just about Swiss Skydiver. Of course, she stole the show with that dramatic stretch battle with the Derby winner in the Preakness Stakes. But then you had Simply Ravishing, who kicked it off for you on Friday to win the Grade 1 Darley Alcibiades. You actually run 1-2 in there with Crazy Beautiful finishing second. Your fifth win in that race. How special was that?
You know, I love the Alcibiades. That's one of my favorite races every year. We always try to get some of our fillies ready for that and prep them to go two turns. And in some cases it works out and others it doesn't. But yeah, it's a great race. And obviously Keeneland, winning at Keeneland is always good. It's home for me. Unfortunately, the crowd's not there, but it's still great racing.
I don't know if you realize it, Kenny, but that five wins in the Alcibiades puts you just one behind D-Wayne Lucas for the all-time win mark in that race.
Oh, I knew it. You know, Wayne's a close friend. Actually, Wayne's a good friend of mine and has been for a long time. I'm always kidding that I'll win more Alcibiades than him. And he always tells me I got a lot of work to do. But he's a real sport about it. It's a real honor to chase a record that a guy like him owns. I've always told him, I said, I'm 27 years younger than you, Wayne. I'm going to get you. Anyway, it's all in fun. But you still have to approach each horse as an individual, and that can't change.
Why do you think that race has been so good to you?
We spend a lot of time trying to develop horses and teach them to go long. I feel like we can probably prepare one to go long as well as anybody in the industry. If you give us a horse that's got talent, then, you know, those kind of races, they're pace races, and a horse needs to know how to rate, relax, and get in cruising mode, and then learn to finish. And we focus a lot in on that. It's when we start them, we do a lot of from the quarter pole to the wire to teach horse finish, 3/8 to the wire. Even when we work horses 5/8 of a mile, the first 3/8 is cruise, and then the last quarter is finish. And I think there's something to that. And it's worked out, so no complaints. And less of the – I don't like running horses 4.5 furlongs and 5 and 5.5 furlongs. Those races just don't suit us.
Yeah, well, whatever you're doing, it's a winning formula. And, you know, it's not just about Simply Ravishing and Crazy Beautiful and that you know, that huge win in the Alcibiades. But Swiss Skydiver, you did everything right with her, and now here she is giving you your first win in the Preakness. And how cool was that stretch battle? I was thinking back to Sunday Silence and Easy Goer.
It was awesome. You never know whether they're going to hold on or not. And, you know, Robbie just did such a magnificent job pacing her and getting her a nice rhythm. We talked about letting her go 48 seconds the first half mile, and then from there, you know, letting her out. And, you know, the hole opened for him. He was able to find his way through there and then hold on the other winner. So it's really cool stuff. You don't get that many opportunities. And we've kind of knocked on the door in some of those big ones. And it's nice to actually hit the wire first.
What was it like for you watching her battle down the stretch and not knowing if you're going to get there? Put me there with you. What was that like for Ken McPeak?
Well, when she turned the corner, I thought she was going to draw away. And in a sense, she did. Except, you know, Bob's horse, Authentic, kept coming at her. And even at the eighth pole, I was like, oh, hold him off. Come on, girl. Well, Robbie hadn't pulled the stick yet, and he had actually waited. He talked all week, probably Friday. He said, I don't think she's a filly that wants to be hit. And what I've watched of her, you don't have to hit her. She'll do the work. And he ended up, he said he lightly tapped her one time the last 16th of a mile, and that was enough to hold him off. It would have been gut-wrenching if she had gotten outrun that last part of it, but it worked out.
You know, you did an interview before the race last week, and thank you for taking the time to do that interview, too. You did it with Bobby Newman and Anthony on our race day show, and you talked about the decision to go with Robbie and how things kind of fell apart with Tyler Gaffalione and the commitment issue that you thought you had a couple races committed from Tyler. That didn't work out. You end up with Robbie. Do you kind of feel like sometimes, Kenny, there's a greater power at work here that kind of guided you in that decision?
Yeah, there's no question. Robbie needed a break, and how that unfolded, I'm still not happy about the way it unfolded, but I'm happy about the way it ended. And, yeah. There was a real – I mean, Robbie and I, even if she had been fourth or fifth this week, we had a good time up there. We spent time with the horse, and I was number one hot walker all week. Robbie was number one exercise rider, and he would hold for a bath, and I would hold for a bath, and we were helping set feed every day. And, you know, it brings me back to when I started, when I only had a few horses. And today, you know, I'm looking at a board here that's got over 80 or 90 horses that I have to worry about every day. So the actual one-on-one with her, I think, was really good for everybody. And it would have been a rare situation that I would have been able to get a jockey to come get on her every day the week going into the race. But because Robbie's business had been on a downturn, he was wide open to go. So, yeah, it worked out well, and we really took a negative and turned it into a positive. I'm extremely proud of that.
Yeah, I was looking back. I couldn't believe this, actually, that it was 18 years since your first classic victory in the Belmont with Sarava, and you come back and win with Swiss Skydiver in the Preakness. 18 years. I couldn't believe it was 18 years to Sarava.
Yeah, you know what? If you'd asked me, would it have taken me that long to get back in there, I would have thought, we kind of knocked on the door. I've had some horses run well in some big races. We were third in the Belmont with Adigan. We were third in the Preakness with Senior Investment. We had a couple of fourths in between there and the Preakness. The Derby, I haven't gotten any closer than Tahana Run in 95. But we've had some horses that were on the fringes and won some of the prep races. And, you know, things got to come together for these things. And it's all about timing and obviously good horses. And, you know, maybe this opens the door for even more. Who knows? But right now we're just going to enjoy the one we got.
Do you take the same approach when you're training a young colt as opposed to a filly like Swiss Skydiver? Do you use the same approach that you just outlined with her and with the fillies?
As far as teaching them to go long?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I would say we tend to line our fillies. We work them in company, and colts against colts and fillies against fillies. But, yeah, it is a similar program, and you – I mean, some of the colts I've developed over the years have been pretty special. I mean, you know, certainly Harlan's Holiday and then Repent and Tana Run being the first one. And I do think we're getting better at it. And we need better stock, which is the end all for most horse trainers, is you need really good horses to compete at a high level. And they're letting me pick more and more of my own because of the work I've done at auction. And I got a pretty good idea what kind of horse it takes and what kind of horse I like. And you know, Bob Baffert's been a guy that did, it's a similar pattern. He's worked the auctions. He is extremely sharp at that. And you try to model yourself out of those that are successful, but everybody's got their own way.
Talking with trainer Ken McPeak here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. His first career win came October 27th, 1985 at River Downs, and now he is sitting here closing in on 2,000 career victories. He'll get there before too long, and he's now a two-time classic winning trainer. Kenny, like you said, the only thing left is that Kentucky Derby win and maybe a couple of Breeders' Cups under your belt. Who knows? Maybe you pick those up this year.
Yeah, you know, we've run really well in some of the Breeders' Cup races. I think we've been second, third, and fourth 18 times, somebody counted, in a modest number of starts. So, you know, that's one of those things. That, once again, we've had horses run really well and get beat necks and half lengths, and that we're just going to keep at it until we knock it down. I think it took Bobby Frankel 40 starters to win a race, somebody told me once. And I think Clements fought through those too. So it is what it is. We've made plenty of money running in the Breeders' Cup. We just hadn't won the big cigar.
How much different is Ken McPeak as a trainer now as opposed to all those years ago when you first started and even maybe with Tejano Run in 1995?
You know what? I think I'm in a really good place right now. The sabbatical that I took in 2005, I think, was necessary to get some clarity. My wife right now, Sherry, is a wonderful asset. She's someone that actually, she says, run them, Kenny. You shouldn't just keep them in the barn. She says, run them. They're athletes. It's okay. And she's right. She's an athlete herself. We've got beautiful young daughter. I mean, my whole setup is fantastic between Magdalena and Lexington, got a home in Louisville, which keeps me at Churchill Barn more. And then we've got the training center at Summerfield. I didn't have all those assets years back, and we farmed them out, per se, to other people to either be broken or to laid up. And the whole team is fantastic. I've got some of the most experienced assistants in the game. I've got guys that have 35 and 40 years experience training horses. It's invaluable. I can't do that. I can't do any of this all by myself. So I learned to let go of the things that I need to let go of and control the things that I need. And when I was younger, maybe I tried to control too much. And so you learn as you go.
Yeah, and it's not just about the team, Kenny. It's about good owners and relationships that you establish with them, too. And owner Peter Callahan, who is the owner of Swiss Skydiver, is somebody who has been by your side for a long time now. Talk about that relationship.
Well, Peter's like a father figure to me. He's a guy that trusts my judgment. And, you know, we've had some good runs together. We had Beautician, another second in the Breeders' Cup. We've got a list of other horses we'd had for him that were high-quality stake horses. But we hadn't had that signature horse. And we actually had what I'd call a slump. I mean, we had 6 or 7 years where it seemed like we couldn't come up with a good horse, or we'd get a horse of that talent and it got hurt, or we have one that had a breathing problem or no talent. There was, and that's part of the game, but he accepts those parts of the game, and he doesn't pout. He doesn't move to another guy. He just says, just keep working hard. We'll get it. We'll get it. He actually encourages and enforces you to work harder, and that's easy for a man like him. He understands how to manage people, and I'm just thrilled that it's his filly. And there's some other people that I work for that are fantastic too. I mean, between Harold Lerner, Scott Leeds, Tommy Lewis, I'm sure I'm missing a bunch. Paul Fireman is an absolute peach of a man, wonderful guy there. The Mackens, I've got horses for. I could go on and on, all the nice people I work for. But the truth is that if they weren't nice people, it wouldn't work for them anymore.
Yeah, how much emphasis, Kenny, do you put on finding owners or establishing relationships with owners that are on the same page as you philosophically when it comes to training horses and competing in this game?
Well, I'm obviously not a claiming trainer anymore at this stage, but I think our program is pretty much narrowed down into young horses, develop young horses, and then see if we can come up with a stake horse. And they do claim a lot of horses off me at a certain stage in the process, and we're okay with that because we felt like we've given that horse a chance to come around. But an owner that comes to us, I'm going to tell them right now, we're looking for the stakes winners. We're looking for horses that are playing at a high level. And if they're not, we're going to run them where they belong. I don't have too many that are on a different page. And if they are, they might have horses other guys they do that with. And it all depends. But like I said, I've got a lot of really, really nice clients. And we need to take care of them first. And they're certainly their horses first. And our win percentage is the least thing I'm worried about. There's a lot of dynamics to the game.
You know, I remember when you first joined me on this show years ago, you told the story of your first job on the track, that it came, if I'm not mistaken, after a night of partying, and it was following your final college class. How much partying did you do after winning the Preakness?
We were pretty well hungover on Sunday morning. I'm not going to deny it. My wife and I had a great time. We all went out dancing a couple locations. I guess we violated maybe a little social distancing that night, but it was what it was. We were surrounded by a lot of good people. Robbie was there and his wife was there and some others from Phasic Tipton. We definitely had a good time.
As you should. Ken McPeak here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. The other story you told me years ago was about your grandfather who took you to the races at Keeneland. I think you told me you were about 8 years old. And you could even remember holding on to his tweed jacket at the windows. What do you think your grandfather would say if he could see all the success you're having now?
No, he was a really quiet man. Hard to say, but he probably would have bet on her. And, that was a great memory, going to Keeneland back then. And, learning how to read a pedigree and reading the form and program and things like that. And if I hadn't grown up in Lexington, I don't think I would have. I mean, certainly I feel fortunate to have grown up in Lexington because we're right there in the center of it all and didn't necessarily come up under a horse racing family at all, for that matter, far from it. But the bug caught me at a young age, and my grandmother would take me to ride ponies at Keeneland when I was a kid, and my dad taught me how to look at a pedigree by the time I was a teenager and went to work on a farm when I was a teenager. It's just really, some people's life aligns, and I'm going to tell you mine has.
No, there's no doubt about it. You know, if you ask people, just a casual racing fan, especially right now, who the best trainer is that they've seen or the best trainer in the game, there will be some people who may go ahead and say Ken McPeak, especially because of the role that you're on right now. How about for you, if I ask you that question, who's the best trainer that you've had the chance to be around or get a chance to watch in this game?
Well, certainly Bob. Bob Baffert has evolved out of, kid from Arizona. I mean, he's got great touch with a horse. He has great respect. Even after we beat him the other night, he petted Swiss Skydiver, and he's got great respect. He's not... People think, oh, he's arrogant. No shot. He really is humble. He's a really decent guy. Wayne Lucas has had his period, and I think the changes he made in the game have been, dramatic and brought it to another level. But Bob's got a great touch with the horse. That's why he's won all these Triple Crown races. And even he will admit, I ran into him in Dubai three seasons ago, and he brought Arrogate over, and we were in the barn next to him, and he's like, Kenny, it's unbelievable. They're bringing me all these horses that can fly. He said, I just can't believe every year I'm getting these. So he really understands that this is not a given, and he's respectful of the fact that these good horses are coming to him, and he handles them correctly. And yeah, he's like all of us. Some of them get hurt. Some of them can't breed, but when you get a good one, he knows when to pull the trigger. And yeah, he's got my respect.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, every trainer has the highs and the lows, and you experience those dips. You went through it. You talked about that earlier. Dwayne Lucas has had his moment, as you said, and he's been at the top of the game. What's the key, Kenny? You've been at the top of the game for a long time. I mentioned Tejano Run in 95. You've been at the top of this game and continued to maintain a high level. What's been the key to being able to do that for so long?
Well, get better horses. When we go to the auctions, whether it's Phasic Tipton or Keeneland or OBS, I mean, I really dig in and say, okay, what kind of horse can I find here that will help me compete at the highest level? And back to Bob, he did that too when he was younger as well. And you've got to have the horses to be able to compete at the highest level. Then you've got to be able to do the right things to get them there. And, you know, when Roy Monroe gave me an opportunity to buy Tejano Run, I nailed it. And when Jerry Bott gave me an opportunity to buy Take Charge Lady, we nailed it. When we bought Golden Ticket, when we bought, gosh, I could go on, so many good horses over the years. You know, Kelly Tolliver, we've had horses that won grade ones for. We've got Harold Lerner win the Eskimo Kisses winning the Alabama. I mean, so it's stock. You got to get the right horses in the barn, and you've got to get a team that handles all the details, and you've got to keep your fingers crossed it all comes together. And it's a game of failure.
When you think back about on your career and everything that you have been able to accomplish, Ken, what's the one thing or maybe the couple of things that you're probably most proud of?
As you evolve as a trainer, okay, so I started training in 85, and there were those that kind of pigeonholed me as a Turfway Park, Ellis Park trainer, and then I said, okay, I got to work hard or get better horses to overcome that. So by 95, we had a Derby horse, or 94, we had a Breeders' Cup horse, and then okay, well, he was lucky. He got one good one, but then by I think 2000, we had She's the Devil Do, and 2001, Take Charge Lady shows up. So just the journey of all that, you can get a good horse once, but to be able to do year after year, or at least every few years, you've got to get a really good horse to keep people remembering, hey, you're here. And I'm proud of that. I figured out a way to do it. I'm actually going to tell you that what I learned about reading pedigree and looking at horses, and I get a photographic memory when I come. I can remember almost every horse I ever trained, how they walked, how they moved, who they were by, who they were out of, things like that. I think that's a gift. And I've been able to apply it to what I do. And it's ridiculous. I get paid to do this. Sometimes I go, oh, my God, I get paid to do this. And I think that pattern or passion is it's helpful. It helps.
If somebody comes to you, a young man, a young woman comes to you now and says, hey, I'm looking to get involved with training horses, what advice do you give me? What do you tell them?
The first thing they need to do is they need to read. I tell hundreds of people, read Speed in the Thoroughbred. It's a great book. I've probably driven the price of it up on Amazon because I recommended it so many times. And there's another book called Tessio in His Own Words, which is another what I'd call 101 basic book about the Thoroughbred. And then from there, I mean, to train horses, it's a grind. The first 10 years, I practically starved to death. Even today, I'm not going to deny it. Sometimes we fight cash flow. We're having, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul and get money in to get money out. And so those kind of things, it's more than just training horses. You got to understand the breeding side of it. You got to understand the business side of it. You got to understand the hours side of it. It's not, there's no long vacations. It does distract from family sometimes. I've got some real, I got a long list of assistants that are out there right now. And some of them I'm really proud of. And, I'm sure maybe over the years there'll be more, but those guys are out there working hard, and girls, and Helen being one, that are learning that getting in the trenches, and it's tough. It's a tough game.
Well, we're inside the final 4 minutes or so here, Kenny, and again, really do appreciate the visit and the candid comments on your life and your career. I have to tell you, I received a tweet when we announced that you were going to be joining me here on the show, and it was from Steve from Mount Washington Tavern. He said, please tell Kenny I said hello and a huge congratulations.
Robbie and I ate there every night this past week, and it became kind of a home away from home. Like, you know, Ma, we're here. You know, of course, it's proximity to Pimlico is real easy. And a really great spot. I mean, anybody up in Baltimore want to go to a great restaurant? Mount Washington Tavern's got the great crab cakes, plenty of good beer and wine, and good atmosphere. Great spot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool place. All right, before I let you go, let's wrap it up with the Philly again. Swiss Skydiver, what's next for her? Where will we see her?
You know what? We haven't made a firm decision, but there are those that say the distaff, the toughie's going to be Monomoy Girl. The classic, I haven't even put a pencil to all of it yet. But she is a win and you're in on both races. And we could probably take that up to, I don't know. I don't even know when exactly we enter. But it's not that far off. And give us a little time to study everything. And we'll pull the sheet numbers on the races and, you know, see where she fits. And then when we're ready to announce it, we'll do it. And Peter and I'll make that decision together.
Yeah, well, you've made every right decision. By the way, how about the decision to go into the Preakness? You had other options there, too, and that turned out to be the right call.
Yeah, you know what? To run against older fillies and mares would have been fine, and I think that would have been a good spot, and perhaps she would have won it. But it also, we felt like straight three-year-olds was a better spot. And like I said, when Tizzle All came out, it made it a lot easier.
Well, Kenny, listen, I know you got things going on, so I'll let you go. Obviously, appreciate the visit here, and thanks so much for taking the time to be on Trainer Talk. Congratulations, and all the best moving forward.
Thank you. We're going to have a party in the barn right now. We've got a bunch of food. The staff's all lined up. So everybody have a great day.
Go enjoy it. Ken McPeak here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion of the show, quite simple. Just head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to this interview and every Trainer Talk interview. They're all there for you. Horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. And follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. Now for my special guest, Ken McPeak, for my producer, Lee Della Pina, in our Lexington studios, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Well, Fasig's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasig Tipton has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Fasig Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
The test of time. There is no better example than Millridge Farm, founded in 1962 by Alice Chandler. This year's inductee into the Hall of Fame as a pillar of the turf. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners and 2 Horses of the Year, nearly 2 per year. If you're looking for success in the thoroughbred business, consider Millridge Farm and its consulting arm, Nicoma Bloodstock, for it is proven and tested over time. The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making such stallions as Malibu Moon. Our current stallion roster includes Mosler by Warfront and Divining Rod by Tappet. Maryland's training center allows us to provide full service from starting youngsters to getting them to the races. We can also help you experience all the excitement of ownership with our partnerships, from the folding barn to the racetrack. Get in the game with Country Life Farm. Visit us at countrylifefarm.com.